Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Yeah. Meow.
Meow. Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow.
Meow. Meow. Freedom Fiends, this is Mr. Derek J, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2 Gay. Professional Prisoner Studios, we blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. This cools your stool to a tepid and tenacious 75 degrees for the insomniacs, swing shift workers, people in other countries, and those who just love having a syringe filled with liberty injected deep into their neck veins. Tonight, we're joined by the jabbering coon cat, Chandler St. Pierre.
Worms.
Worms, man. Hey, are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
Nope, no government for me.
Woohoo!
Pretty safe.
That's good, man.
Myself these days.
Me too. No government for me. Tonight, we've got some very important topics. We're going to talk about VSLAs. Have you heard about these things? They're popping up all over the place. Chandler's got the scoop. But first, you went to a Saul Williams show. Tell me about it.
I did. I went down to Somerville, Mass last Saturday. And I went to a lounge club. It's called Cuisine on Local, and you know, the upstairs has a little lounge bar. They sell like organic food and, you know, really overpriced stuff. And I gotta say though, it was really good. Like, I went down and we had been having a good time all day, and I was really, really hungry.
Is it low fat, no carb, organic? Vegan?
Yeah, probably. Well, it's not vegan, I'll tell you that. Like, the best thing they had on the menu was like a rack of lamb with, you know, all these herbs and spices.
Oh, yeah.
It looked so good, but it was like, you know, $25. So, kind of on a budget here. So, I said, well, I'll just take a carnita. You ever had one of those?
Nah, what is it?
It's shredded pork, and it had like peppers and onions. It was so
I feel like good. I've had that. Is it in a taco or something?
Well, it was kind of like on a taco shell. It was a round, small round shell about the size of an ashtray, mounded over. And it was
appetizing.
So good. Well, you know, it is a bad comparison, but I'm looking at this, you know, an ashtray right now, and it's the exact same size. You know, it's a small, probably like, I don't know, three inch.
Is it those corn tortillas, man?
Yes.
I hate those. I don't want a corn tortilla ever again in my life. They always fall apart. They hold food.
Well,
they're not good at that.
I gotta say, like, I thought, I'm not a big fan of them either, but this was like, I don't know, wheat, you know, special, good for you or whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was delicious. It was just tiny. I was like, man, I could eat like four more of these.
Yeah.
So,
but they were all probably very expensive, all the food on
the
menu.
Yeah, they were. The guy at the bar where I ordered the carnita, he had a pitch for some rum, and he gave me a sample. It was clear rum, which I don't usually like, but it was really decent. And he was like, yeah, this is from a local distillery, and he was telling me how they've worked their way up, and you know, they still haven't gotten all cracked down by the government. And
cool.
Gave me this whole spiel, and it was really good. And I was like, well, how much for a shot? He's like, $8. And I was like,
whoa. Yeah,
I was like, now I remember why I don't go out, you know. But
it's not so like that everywhere. That. I mean, how do people think that's justifiable? Because they've got you captive. Like, you have to be at this show, and you can't run out and go get liquor somewhere else, or you can't sneak your own in. Or
you actually could, because there was a liquor store right next door. And one of the cool things about this place is that we walked in and we were early. Like, the doors opened at 8, and we asked what time the opening act was coming out, and they said it wasn't until like 9:30.
Who's we?
So that. It was my buddy Paul and I. He took me down. It was actually his idea, which was really cool.
Were you two on a date?
Sure, why not? And so we went, and they like marked our hand, and they're like, yeah, you can come in and out. So we went out for a walk and kind of checked out the neighborhood and everything. It was
checked out the liquor store.
Nah, I'm not saying that, you know, whatever. And so it was really cool. But you got to think, remember, when you're down in Boston, the cost of living is a lot more.
But you weren't
there,
in Boston.
More pricey. Well, okay, Mass. You know, it's a suburb of Boston. Whatever.
Oh, okay.
It's not like Maine or New Hampshire.
Yeah, so New Hampshire is more. Liquor is super cheap, and they sell it on the highways.
Yeah, well, yeah, we made a stop there too. But so anyway, we get in, and the opening act comes out. He's a young gentleman rapper. He was really decent. The DJ was really
the person
cool.
Who was not Saul Williams.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he did his thing, whatever, and we waited a while. And the second act came out, and they were a band called Sons of an Illustrious Father. And they were really, really good. They were a three-member band.
Were they religious? That sounds like a religious thing.
No, not at all. I really don't know how to describe them. I've never heard a band like them before.
Were they brothers? Were they really sons of an illustrious father? Or is that just something they made up?
I don't think. I think that was just the name. You guys should check them out, though. They were decent.
Worms.
It's a three-member band. You know, a keyboardist, a drummer, and a guitar player. The guitarist and singer was female, although they all sang, and they kind of switched it up a couple of songs, which I really liked. Like, the drummer went and played guitar and sang, the guitarist went and played drums, and the keyboardist played bass. So they mixed it up. They were really good. So they get done their set, and I was thoroughly impressed.
Did the first guy, the first rapper, did he have, like, a background track to his performance?
Well,
was it just spoken word rap?
No, he had a DJ that was really cool. I was actually checking out his gear after. He had a Mac Pro and a Korg and a couple other synths, and he was doing some really cool stuff. I wish I could have caught his name. I didn't, because I'd like to look him up, too.
Mm-hmm.
So we're waiting. You know, we're just kind of sitting on the floor. And the thing is, the tickets to this were $16. We bought ours on Ticketmaster, like, I don't know, early, and we paid like $25. I don't know why this place wasn't packed to the hilt. You know, it's a small club. The floor was probably like the size of a half court of a basketball court. And it was a really personal environment.
Yeah, it sounds intimate.
I've only been to a few club shows. Most of the shows I've been to are amphitheaters and arenas, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, that's a good way to describe it, intimate. So we're waiting, and... You know,
like, you can hear other people coughing if it's quiet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, and it totally was. And there was a very diverse crowd there, you know. There was no such thing as race or age or anything, you know. Everybody you can imagine was there. So,
I'm sure there weren't old geezers. There was no one over 60 there, was there?
I think there was a couple of people that would fall into that range.
There were some grandpas or grandmas? Or both?
I think they were grandpas. I didn't see any grandmas.
All right.
But, so the DJ comes out and starts just doing this insane, like, electronic beatboxing stuff with his computer and the lights. And, you know, the tour that Saul was doing is called the Martyr Loser Tour. It's very political. I don't know what his politics are, and I don't want to know. He's a really enlightened guy, so I kind of think he's an anti-statist, but I don't know.
Are you afraid you're going to find out he's some, like, state-worshipping...
I highly doubt it, but I don't want to take that chance. You know,
mm-hmm.
I had a few musicians, my opinions of them ruined because of that. So
yeah, Rage Against the Machine totally got ruined in my mind.
So yeah, like, I can't do that whole communist
they're
thing.
They're raging against the machine by falling in goose step with it. Like, gross.
So the lights come down and we get up and the DJ's doing all this stuff. And this guy, like, pushes past me, right? Just kind of, not rudely, but kind of, you know, nudges right past me. And I look and it's Saul. He came from the back of the room. And he's out on the floor, and he just starts rapping, and you got to understand, I don't like rap music. I'll be completely honest. I'm not into hip hop or anything, but I love him. I've listened to him since like 2004.
Wait a minute, why is he different? Why does he get a pass? You don't like rap? Why not?
Be- Well, he's different for a couple of reasons. One, he doesn't do that gangster stuff. And that's not my thing. If that's your thing, cool. But that's not him.
Yeah, I dig it.
He's very spiritual. He's very intimate. He's a poet first and foremost, and you can tell when you hear his music. And his music too is very, it's more industrial, I guess you could say. Like, he did an album with Trent Reznor.
Wow.
From Nine Inch Nails. Yeah.
And so,
it was a lot of rap. Saul Williams album, but it was really good.
So, like, a lot of rap comes from the street, you know? Like, I guess the early 80s, early 90s, it was sort of from poor neighborhood gangsters, but he's got a poetic background.
Yeah, he's got that vibe, but it's different. So he's out on the floor and, like, you know, right in our faces, we're dancing with him and he's singing and doing all this. And it's just, I've never felt anything like that.
So you were standing really up? Cool. You weren't seated?
No, it was just an open floor.
Oh, okay. So everyone was standing. How did you eat if you were standing?
Well, I told you there's a lounge upstairs.
Oh, okay. All right.
And that's where we went. So, he gets on the stage and does a few more. And he's like, before he gets on the stage, he's like, this isn't a concert. This is an experiment. And he talks about, like, user participation and how we're part of the show. And I mean, he really made us feel it, you know? So he went and did a few songs on stage. Then he came back down on the floor and was singing and dancing. And then the music stops and he just starts free versing and just slamming out this poetry. It was excellent. And he goes back up on stage. The opening act comes out, does a song with him. And then the second act, Sons of an Illustrious Father, he calls them out. And they just finished the show together. Like, they played the music with the DJ.
Whoa.
And Saul just sang. It was, I have never experienced anything like it. It was the second to the last show. But I will tell you, if he comes around again and you get a chance to check him out, even if it's only a poetry reading, he's well worth it.
I'll go.
He's an amazing individual.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Hey, did you get the impression that was planned? Or, you know, like, was it premeditated, calling the other band up?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they performed really well together, so.
I got more questions about this Saul Williams guy. Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Yeah. Worms in your mind.
Yeah.
Brain worms.
Worms. So, tell me about Saul Williams, man. How'd you hear about this cat?
All right, that's an interesting story. As you know that I'm a super Nine Inch Nails fan. And I was listening to a radio show that
you Trent kind of Reznor look like Trent Reznor.
Thanks. I don't think so. I'm a lot tubbier and whiter, but hey, whatever. So I was listening to a radio show he was doing from Europe, and he played a bunch of bands, and this song comes on called List of Demands. You should definitely check that one out. And it's just got this in your face, bum, 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 beat. And I'm like, wow, what is this? And I'm listening to it and I'm like, I really like this. And after the show, he went through the set list and he was like, that's Saul Williams. And I remember he was talking to him and he was like, I think he breathes new life into the hip hop genre because he's so different the way he does his stage performance and on his albums. So I was like, all right, I went and downloaded that album and I really liked it. So the next day I went to the music store and bought it. And then I started getting all his albums. And the album he did with Trent, they did that online model where, you know, you pay what you want.
Yeah, that's the best way. I think all music is going to be that way in the future.
it's a good model, and I think he did fairly well. Like, I love the album, so I paid $10 for a digital copy.
It's the way, you know, it's the old model, actually, because isn't that the way that crooners and, I don't know, the regular people who, traveling minstrels, used to put out a hat, and, you know, they would perform somewhere live, yeah. And people would throw money in, whatever they thought was what it was worth. That's what we're doing with the internet.
And I mean, they made the presentation worth it. You know, you get a digital download and a digital PDF booklet with some cool artwork and stuff. And I just really like the album. Like, I think the suggested price was like $3. And I was like, whatever, here's 10. You know, and then I ended up buying it again to give to a friend. And I could have just, like, you know, copied it or whatever. But so it was really cool. And then he's been in a movie called Slam, which is I highly recommend. It's a very good movie about a guy who's wrongfully accused of a crime. And most of the movie takes place the night before he gets sent to prison, and then there's scenes from him in prison.
Like,
and,
around,
you know, Saul is,
like, around what year was this movie?
Oh, I'll tell you in a second.
What decade?
Right up on... Oh, it was in the late 90s, I think. Let me see. It's on the Wikipedia page. Slam came out in 1998. So it's
semi-modern.
Directed by Mark Levin. And my friend Paul that took me to the show, he's actually the one who recommended that movie. It's an indie film. You know, it's not very well known, but I think it's well done. And he's like, yeah, you should check out this film. And then more recently, Saul was, I think, one of the stars in the Broadway musical Holler If You Hear Me.
Yeah.
Holla. And it's a musical featuring music by Tupac.
Wow, and, cool.
Yeah, I saw a few clips of that, and the musical looked really good.
Does he play Tupac? Or it's just songs?
I think it's like loosely based on his life, that sort of thing. I haven't seen much. I saw a couple of clips online, but there isn't a whole lot out there. But they had a short run on Broadway, and he was in that. And he's written a bunch of books. She said the shotgun to the head and the Dead MC Scrolls. Well,
that's a great
said
name.
The shotgun from the head is from a killer song off his self-titled album, Saul Williams, called Shakespeare Act 3. That is an excellent song, and that's one of the lines from the song. So, but yeah, I mean, all around, like I said, I've been to a lot of shows, you know, and I don't know, man, there was a really different vibe. It was very intimate, very personal. It was just good. Like, I hate to sound like a hippie, you know, but I was all, like, bursting with, you know, good energy and love and just kind of dancing and having a good time. And I mean, you get like that at shows, you know.
I feel you. So my introduction to Saul Williams was a couple of minutes ago when you were like, hey, you should check out this Saul Williams guy. And I pulled up I just Googled him real quick, found a video called Coded Language where he performs at the Deaf Poetry Jam. And I was feeling it. I mean, I was, I felt more energized. I was like connected with this guy. You know, artists who use words, it's like the highest form of art, in my opinion. Like, words are kind of new in the human experience.
I think art is a good form.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
LRN.FM needs your help getting our satellite signal back on in Africa. Our satellite provider had us on at no charge from 2012 through February of this year when they pulled the channel off the air. Now we're trying to raise $22,000 to continue reaching people with the message of liberty in places where it's needed most. Please visit our Indiegogo fundraiser at africa.lrn.fm. Give what you can and share the link with your friends. africa.lrn.fm.
All right, we'll finish up with the whole art thing. I wanted to finish my thought because I was too slow on the whatever. So artists in general, when they're really creative, especially, I think art is the new form of activism. Like the kind of activism you cats do in Keene, that's really cool. It's not my cup of tea. I can't get out in the street. I did the protest thing. I did the filming thing. It's just not for me, right? So I think under those circumstances, you're having this sort of evolution where people that don't want to do that sort of activism use art. They use words. They use music. They use film. They use pictures to make statements and get people asking questions. And I think that's probably, it's not more effective, but it's another alternative in the way we progress it as a race and the way we fight bigotry and racism and statism and hate, you know, and try to bring love and understanding into people's hearts. And we're all different, but I don't know, man. Those differences shouldn't separate us like that. And I think art bridges that gap.
Yeah, I agree. But not just any art. Like, I see performance art and spoken word as some of the highest forms of art, because I don't know if this is true or not, but I think that language and like reenactments, I think that's part of our higher brain, like some of the more recently developed parts of our brain. And, you know, like pictures and visual stuff is part of the deeper, older brain. Like, oh, I see things, you know, I'm seeing stuff. Like, even fish have eyes, and I don't think they do much performance art. But,
well, I have a lot of respect for people that can get up and just slam that stuff out. You know, like I was saying, Saul did during the show. I mean, I write poetry badly, but, you know, I write, then I edit, and then I rewrite it, and then I edit some more, and it's a process, and I'm never really satisfied with it. For somebody just to get up and, you know, in front of a crowd, no less, and just start slamming out these mad, you know, ideas, I guess you could say, it's pretty amazing to me how people can do that.
It makes me wonder how good is his stuff when he's just kicking it with his friends. You know, when I'm chilling with my friends, or when I see musicians just sort of jamming with each other, like, they are on it, you know? And that's sort of when they're at their peak. And then there's other times where it's like, all right, look, I just got to cut this album. I just got to put it out there. I got to make my checks. So I'm going to do this performance, and here it's at its finished product level today. And I'm just going to say it's over and then move on to the next project.
It's interesting because I have always, I think I've told you before, I collect bootlegs.
Bootleg what?
And bootlegs of shows. I mean, I have probably over, I don't know, 1,000 different shows from bands.
Cool.
And if you know, generally speaking, I'll listen to a bootleg before I'll listen to an album.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few exceptions. There's definitely a few exceptions, but I like live stuff.
Yeah.
The energy's different. The feelings is, and I know that a lot of performances are rehearsed and everything, but it's still different.
Nah, but the Grateful Dead put out whole albums filled with just their live stuff, you know, their live recordings at different places. So
that was the first show I went to. That was great.
You went to a Dead show? That was the first one?
That was my first concert. It was so funny too, because I was one of the suckers that actually bought a ticket. It was in '95.
Was that not a thing? Is it people just sneak in, or what's the deal?
Well, no. We went to Highgate, Vermont, and it was an old airfield. And we got in. We got there early or whatever, and we were sitting down. And I remember the Dead came out. Bob Dylan opened, and he was horrible.
Bob Dylan was horrible? Well, in '95, he was just sort of a shadow of what he once was, right?
Yeah, and I'm not really a big Bob Dylan fan anyway.
And his voice has died now. It's like a single ply toilet paper.
Yeah, he doesn't do it for me. I love the Dead. I've listened to them for a long time. But so we're sitting down on the ground, and the Dead come out and they start playing Touch of Grey. And I turn around and look, and the gate that was holding, you know, like there was a gate and there was just two little, you know, paths to go through. And they weren't processing people's tickets fast enough to let them in. So the Dead come out and play Touch of Grey, and I turn around and look, and the fence just comes crashing down, and all these hippies come flooding in. It was just like a flood of hippies.
Wow.
And they ended up declaring it a free concert. They sold 40,000 tickets, and I think 110,000 people showed up.
They're like, yeah, that's enough. If you're wearing tie-dye, come on in.
Yeah, so it was a good time. It was, you know, for a first, you know, I was 18.
Nice.
And, it was
your first concert. You were 18?
Yeah,
dude, I was 9. I think I told you this before, but my first concert was the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I felt all right about
that. I tried to make up for it with Faith, my kid. You know, I think I took her first concert. She was 12 or 13. We went to see Alice Cooper and Rob Zombie.
All right, did she love it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Alice Cooper, that guy never puts on a bad show, man.
Cool.
When we saw him that time, he was singing Cold Ethel, and he was dragging around the doll, and he tripped and fell right on his face. And,
oh.
You know, the guy's getting up there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh. That guy gets right up and keeps singing, doesn't even miss a beat.
Wow. Well, you know, like, he's on a bunch of drugs, like, right? Aren't all those old rockers just like...
No, man. Well, he had a big problem with alcohol, and he was admitted to a institution, which is where the album From the Inside came out. But he's not a drug guy.
Oh, okay.
He was never a big drug guy.
Really? Actually, I mean, how do you be like Alice Cooper of all artists and musicians? Just seems to me like he made it through Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, think about Frank Zappa, the guy who first signed Alice Cooper. I mean, that guy is really weird, and he never did drugs either.
Wow. You know, they say. I mean, I'm skeptical.
It's that creative. I mean, I've got a friend who is a super creative drummer and musician, and I know for a fact this guy has never done drugs. He's a very intense, very strange cat, but it's not from drugs.
I think I'm just super jealous of those people who can perform and produce amazing creative quality work without the influence of drugs, just because like how do they do it? It blows my mind to think, like, and I guess
their brain works a different way.
Yeah, I guess they're tapping into a different energy or something. And also the people who like really get wasted on a lot of drugs, like, they always go downhill. Like, any kind of creativity or talent that they had beforehand, once they get hooked on any substance or whatever, just sort of fades and kills their mojo.
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the, well, not all, but a lot of the greats, you know, that were really bad into drugs, and they died young. It's really sad.
Yeah, man.
But there's still a lot of good people out there, and definitely, I can't stress it enough, if you get a chance to check Saul Williams out, check him out.
Worms. Cool. Worms, I will.
So, yeah, man, art saves. Art saves. Just remember that.
I haven't been to any, like, performances or magical experiences like that in a while. I guess my last one was Porkfest, which is coming right up around the corner.
Right up.
The Porcupine Freedom Festival here in New Hampshire.
And we're going to get you a tent and get you camping out.
No
right?
way,
no
man.
Hotels?
No, I stay in hotels because I am a fancy boy and I don't like bugs at all. I'll be spraying mosquito repellent.
Not that bad.
It is. I don't. Well, I don't want to see an ant.
You came down to our site, right? The one that Derek, our programmer.
Yeah.
Derek and
I was all over Porkfest. I was all over the place, man.
That site's great. It wasn't really buggy, and the ground is fairly level.
No, I'm not complaining about, like, Porkfest proper. I'm not saying, like, oh, this place is really buggy. I'm saying, like, out in the woods is just not my scene. In fact, I was telling you over the break that I just bought myself a bug-out bag, and I hope to never have to use it, a bug-out bag being the idea that if, you know, you have to... If society collapses one day or something disaster happens, you've got a bag of prepared materials so that you can survive out in the wilderness or in any sort of environment. And I'm really, you know, like, I'm praying I never have to use that thing.
Yeah, me too, man.
I know some people would be excited, like, well, I'm going to put the tent in here, and I'm going to put a little sleeping bag. And I'm like, no, oh, God, no. I got myself a little... I did a couple of upgrades, though. So I've been saying I'm going to do a bug-out bag for years, for literally like 5 years, and it hasn't happened. So I broke down and just bought one on Amazon. And you can buy them with Bitcoin, too, by the way, which I thought was super cool. I ended up doing it through Gift, G-Y-F-T. It's like a little app that you can use to buy stuff in the real world with Bitcoin, and it sort of works as an intermediary and gives you a little kickback, because like if you use a credit card, there's a credit card fee, right? But if you use Bitcoin, there's no credit card fee, so they get to pass along the savings to you. Yeah, it's pretty nice. So I got some points back buying this bug out bag. It was pretty sweet, and I used the currency of peace and freedom, Bitcoin, that fake internet money that you can't use to do anything except buy life-saving devices and everything else on the internet. So it's cool. I've got, like, you know, pouches of water and a little flashlight that you can crank up. I'm going to do a little upgrades. They didn't include, get this, like, no way to make fire. I'm like, hello? Really? Kind of important out in the wilderness? Like, yeah, I know I've got some lighters, but give me some fire.
Just rub a couple of sticks together, man.
Yeah, right. That's not going to work for me.
That's so funny, too, because you see that, like, the cartoons and all the old cowboys and Indian shows and everything. I've camped a lot, and I've never been able to successfully do that.
Have you tried it? What do you... I mean, oh, I guess you could use a lens or something from the sun, but then you need the sun. Well, like, what if it's a cloudy day? Like,
no, you're supposed to take the sticks, and you get a little divot in one stick, and you take the other stick and put it between your palms and, you know, rub it together to spin it. And I could never do it. I'm not saying it can't be done, but it's challenging. But, you know, you can get one of the best things I found. I made my bug-out bag. But go up to Walmart and get some magnesium. It's like a
stick of
magnesium.
That's what I got. It's like $3. I got, like, a little thing of magnesium and a striker. You can use the thing for, like, a million times.
And I will tell you the best trick when we get back for fire starting.
All right, worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Survival worms.
The worms are in my brain. Oh, man.
I felt them during the break. I heard those voices.
So,
before we left, I told you I was going to tell you a neat fire starting trick. And I'm sure
lay it on me, man.
This one. You take, save up all your old toilet paper and paper towel rolls, the cardboard rolls, and you save the lint from your dryer. And you take all that lint and you stuff them in the rolls. And those make a really good fire starter.
How long do they last? Are they just like one little explosion of fire and then they're over?
They burn for a little while. I'd say probably 2-3 minutes.
What do you want to burn so that it's like stays burning for a while? Because I've seen some of those do-it-yourself made out of tin can, pour some alcohol and put some cotton balls in it and then poke some holes and light it on fire, and you've got a little stove that burns for like an hour or something.
Yeah, I've seen those. I haven't really experimented. You know what I did get at Pork Fest last year that was really cool? There was a guy that was making rocket stoves and selling them for lots of silver.
One of the fiends is making a rocket stove. I heard you can make one for like $8 out of a couple of cinder blocks.
Well, yeah, I posted that one on Facebook. That's a really cool... It's like a little furnace type of thing. I had never seen them like that. I mean, the ones I'm talking about are you take the couple of coffee cans and you... I think you fill... like you line them with rocks or something. I don't remember exactly how it works, but they're really cheap to build.
Question mark, then you profit.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a while since I've looked at the diagram on how to make them, but I know they're not overly complicated and they're relatively cheap. But this guy was selling them, you know, it was black with a white porcupine painted on it, and I happened to have an ounce of silver in my pocket, so I was like, yeah, give me one of those.
So what other things should I put in my bug out bag when I'm personalizing it here? You say I should have a gun in there?
I would have a gun.
What kind of gun? I mean, I can't carry around. Maybe should I have a shotgun there? I feel like I need three guns. I need a shotgun, a rifle, and a handgun.
Well, that would be good, but you're going to need a really big bug out bag. And I have a really big bug out bag, but I don't have any rifles.
Well, why don't I just strap the rifle and the shotgun on my shoulders and then handgun in the bag?
Yeah, I mean, in that circumstance, that would work. You're going to want matches. You know, you can dip regular strike matches in wax, and that'll waterproof them. And you want to make sure you keep the strike strips off the matchboxes. You know, keep that in a plastic airtight container. Some fishing lines, some fishing hooks.
Ew, what for? Do I have to go fishing?
Well, you want to eat, man.
Oh, I don't want to fish.
I keep bungee cords and rope in mine. I have it's a lamp, radio. It's like a multi thing, you know, one of those wind. I have a canteen. I have water purifying pills.
Oh, I got myself one of those Life Straw things where
those are really cool.
You can apparently, as long as it's not salt water, if it's fresh water, even no matter how dirty it is, you can just, you know, fill up a cup of whatever that water is and suck through the straw, and then it purifies it on its way to your mouth somehow, so you can survive.
Yeah, it's a gravity filter. Yeah, I just saw that somebody posted it on, I think, Twitter, or maybe it was Facebook, I don't know, and I was like, wow, that's really cool. I'm definitely gonna get one of those. I have a first aid kit in mine, binoculars, the light, the radio, some fishing stuff.
Hey, what's the difference between propylene rope and other rope?
I think that's more weather resistant and stretchy. I'm not 100% sure. I have like regular, like, you know, the rope used for clotheslines. I have some of that.
That's what I got. Like some paracord, I think they call it. But
I don't have paracord. That's the stuff to have.
Tent that this came with looked pretty flimsy. I mean, it comes in a little bag. I don't think it's any kind of tent that I would want to use for protection. Like, there are bears around. They are definitely going to come and kill me. There's no way they're keeping that out.
That's why you sleep in the trees, man.
What? Oh, sleep, man, I didn't know I'm like supposed to sleep in the trees. Then the snakes are going to get me.
Yeah, I haven't slept in too many trees myself, but, you know.
I feel like I'll roll out.
Just build a deadfall, you know, if you build a deadfall right in front of your tent, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I have a lot to learn about bugging out and living in the wilderness.
Fine.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
meow, 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 meow. Freedom Fiends reconvenes for the second hour. Hey, Chandler, let's change gears a bit. I want to talk about love.
Talk about love, huh?
Let's talk about love.
I'm an old hippie, so maybe.
So, what is love? Is it even a real thing?
Okay, so that's... I told you during the break, it's kind of funny you mentioned that, because I was talking with my buddy last night about that. And, you know, he's in the dating pool constantly and forever with so many different people, I just can't keep track. But and he said, I'd like to settle down, but, you know, that love thing's really complicated and really hard. And he's like, I don't think you should force it. And I said to him that you definitely shouldn't have to force it, but these notions that we have about love and relationships... maybe it's just a cynical part of me and what I've been through. I don't think they're realistic.
What do you mean? What's not realistic about the expectation of love?
Well, you know, you would do anything. And like a lot of our Fiend hosts, and I'm sure a lot of our Fiend listeners out there, are married or have significant others.
Yeah, I mean, they're partnered.
Michael's always telling the story of, you know, him and his wife, DJ, and they seem to have a really good relationship.
Yeah, those two are so lucky to have each other. It's amazing. I'm so jealous.
But I think they're probably a little different than most people. They have a very unique relationship.
Yeah, like but how do two unique people like that find each other? Out of all the people on the planet, you know? It's amazing that these matches even happen.
It is, and... so one of the things my friend was saying was, like, when he was talking about the whole it shouldn't be forced and you should just feel it and it should just go and, you know, you should just want to spend time and la, 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 la. And it's like, you do feel that way when you care about somebody and when you love somebody, but love requires work. I mean, if you talk to people that have been married 50 years that are still happy, not the kind that just want to, you know, tear each other's eyes out. You see those too, and it's sad. I mean, I've seen people on their wedding anniversaries fight about what they're going to do. That's ridiculous.
Wow.
But the people that are happy will tell you that it requires work every day. It requires compromise. And I think that's the biggest thing.
Well, like what? What's an example? Because I'll tell you what I'm afraid of is there's a lot of couples that I see. All right. First of all, where this is coming from is I'm just going to pour my heart out to you. I'm going to lay down on the Fiend couch and you're going to be my psychologist doctor. We're going to use this microphone.
I pity you. You're talking to a guy who reads Charles Bukowski all the time.
Well, give me your best advice or what little you can. So let me know, you know, give me some direction here. I'm 25. For the last 2 years, I haven't had a boyfriend. And I am used to having a boyfriend. For the years previous, I always did since I was 17. And from my observation, there are two kinds of people in the world. There are partnered people and there are single people. And the single people pretty much stay that way their whole lives. You know, they might date occasionally. But even in the relationships that they do have, they don't seem to be like that invested in it. They're solitary. And I want to be one of the partner people. And I haven't been this way for a while. You know, I've dated and I've had good, I've had a good time dating and meeting lots of wonderful guys. But I want that one who it's like you go home to, the one you complain to, that you can tell about your bad day, the one you can, brag about your accomplishments and not tell the whole world so you seem like a narcissist. You know, I want the relationship where people are like kind of made to be in pairs, right? They're social animals. Well, and I haven't had this, man.
I think you're already on your way.
How's that possible?
You said there's two people, single people and you know, coupled people.
Yeah.
And you want to be one of those. Like, I've been single now for, going on 3 years. I mean, I've dated a little bit here and there.
How long was your last relationship?
My last relationship was 8 years. And, you know, when you were asking earlier how to give an example, a good example is the young lady that I was with. she knew this was back when I was really heavy into the activism and, you know, I was doing the podcast and I was out marching and going to gun shows and going to protests and everything. And that really wasn't her cup of tea.
Yeah.
But she was always very supportive of it. She would come with me and, you know, she would try to understand and encourage me. So that's what I mean by effort. You know, it definitely wasn't what I would say fun for her. You know, it wasn't like she didn't get the thrill that I got from it.
Boo! But because she love should not be a sacrifice, in my opinion. That sounds like a horrible situation.
But because she loved me and she cared about me, she tried. And I think oftentimes, you know, she did have fun. It was a new experience for her. Sometimes she was probably just rolling her eyes going, oh, are we done yet?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think on the average, it was a new experience and it was good, but she put that effort into it. And you have to, it has to go both ways.
You know,
you have to discover when you're with somebody, you know, you're different people. You have, hopefully you have a lot in common and that definitely helps. You know, music and food and activities, that sort of thing. You want to have those things in common so that you can share the experiences.
Those things are too general. I want to have specific things in common, you know? I want to have the same ideologies, basically. And this ideology, the one of, like, total liberty, total freedom, is
good
so
luck.
Yeah, it's so lonely, man. There's no, like, there's not very many other people in the world who think humans are born free completely. You know, like, most people are hey, you're born into a society and then you have to fit the mold of everything that came before you. I'm like, no, I don't feel that.
You're preaching to the choir with that one, man. I know it's very hard for me to find women who, you know, when I say that heroin should be freely available in vending machines, as long as they're privately owned, you know, that just about kills the conversation.
That probably trips them out big time.
That, you know, I mean, obviously that's macho libertarian flash or whatever, but when we get into the details of what I consider a free society and a free individual, you're right. It's very hard for people to grasp, and it can make it lonely. And I'm not willing to compromise that. You know, like the last woman I was with, we had talked about getting married. And,
whoa, the one you were with for 8 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had no problem at the time. I would have married this girl, but I wasn't gonna do the marriage ceremony, like the paperwork.
Good, you know, for you, man. Stuff. Yeah, you were gonna have a stateless wedding, right?
Right. And she was just like, "Look, for once, can't you just be normal?"
Oh,
you
know? Come on! I don't want the pomp and circumstance. I don't want all the state involvement. We don't need lawyers and judges and municipalities involved in our relationship, honey.
Right, but To do the stateless route, it makes it more complicated, you know, when you file those ridiculous taxes and when you go to buy a home, it does make it makes it more difficult. I get it. But, I mean, that's a part of me, and you gotta kind of go with that.
So, yes.
I mean, that's what I talk about making compromises. And so it's very hard. I think you just have to build those bridges. Like, you know, we both loved, our music tastes were very different, but we both loved, you know, Nine Inch Nails. We both loved the Dresden Dolls.
Cool.
You know, there was that sort of bridge, and we went to shows together. I actually dragged her to a lot of Ozfest shows, but she had a good time, you know. I mean, she never saw Ozzy till she met me.
So what was the foundation? I mean, 8 years is pretty heavy. So was there something that really united you two? Was it music?
Well, no. I mean, you grow on people. You care about people.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid of. No, we got to bring up this word codependence, because I want to have a real relationship, a loving, committed, monogamous relationship for the rest of my life without being codependent. And that's what I'm afraid of. In some of my past relationships, I feel like that's absolutely what it was. You know, I needed that other person in order to, I don't know, like, get on with my life. And I felt like I was using the other person sort of as a crutch, and they were using me. Like, we weren't really growing individually in the ways that we should have been because of the way we were
dependent
on each other.
Well, you grow individually. You do grow individually, but you grow as a unit or a couple as well. You know, that you grow two ways, and I think as long as you can maintain that, you don't become codependent. I mean, I don't know
how to avoid that.
That codependent thing is, I get it, and it's real. Like, there are certain people that can't do the relationship thing without, you know, they have to have that other person. They can't be single. I don't think you fall into that camp. Like, you've obviously been single, and you live your life and do your stuff. So,
yeah, but no, regular sex is a part of it. I mean, that's a part of relationships, right? That
of course it is.
That can develop a codependency of, like, I don't want to go out into the market and have to find new partners all the time. You know, I'd rather settle for this one person and then make sure that things are regular, you know? Like, let me tell you, I just had a date with this guy in Rashad. I've talked about him on the show before. I've talked about him on Flaming Freedom. And this is, like, the guy who I'm sort of going after. I've been searching around for years looking for someone who might be a match for Derek J. And I found this guy who I think is really close, that we might actually be able to have a meaningful long-term relationship. He's into small government. He's into, you know, like, dressing preppy and sort of the way that I dress and doing the things that I like to do. But what I'm afraid of is becoming codependent on this person. And also, I'm worried, like, what if I care more about the relationship than the other person? This is something I learned about.
Okay,
this
is probably the most important piece of advice I could ever give you. You can't worry. You can't spend your time saying, what if? Because when you start to do that, that'll pervade everything that you do in your relationship, and it'll kill any chances that you have.
I think that's what I've been doing wrong, man. Because I've learned that the person who cares about the relationship the most loses.
Yes. So don't give in to that fear. Don't let that become what defines you.
All right.
And that goes for anything in life, man. Anything. But especially in love.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Chandler, paging Dr. Chandler, paging Dr. St. Pierre. Hey, I need some advice, man. So my last relationship was 2 years ago, like I said. The guy who I was dating for like a year is now married, and it trips me out because, like, you know,
yeah.
I see,
we're still weird.
Yeah, we're still friends on Facebook, and I've seen their marriage photos. Like, they just had a little anniversary, or like when they celebrate each other's birthday. It's like, oh, you know, there's the guy that I should have been with. You know, there's the guy that I ended the relationship because I didn't think that we had a long term future together. Why not? I let that fear that you were talking about get a hold of me and get the better of me. And now I'm a single guy, and I don't have that loving relationship that this guy's got. So joke's on me. You know, I thought I was winning by cutting off the relationship. Like, oh, well, if I cut it off, I won't get hurt. You know, I'll hurt him so that I don't get hurt. But I ended up losing.
Well, yeah, and that, you don't want to hurt anyone.
Well, I wasn't trying to hurt him. It was just that I was afraid of getting hurt.
Right, and again, that fear of whatever. I'll give you a good example of something that I've realized as I've gotten older and maybe a little wiser. You know, you know how I am with music, and I really dig my music. And
it's your heartbeat.
Yeah, it is. It totally is. And you know, I was hanging out with a young lady, and she's got an iPod, and I put a bunch of music on her CDs.
That's something that you should do as a boyfriend.
Right.
You should give her good music.
She's not into the whole tech. Well, no, it was mostly her stuff. You know, she's like, I've got all these CDs and I don't know how to do it. So I showed her.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I gave her a few things too. So we're driving in her car, and you know me, I'm like, oh, this music's killing me, blah, 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 blah.
Always being the critic.
Just being total like lame, you know? And so I came to the realization one day. She's like, oh, do you want to play this? You bring your iPod? I'm like, no, whatever. Just whatever, fine. We'll listen to your stuff. And it wasn't that bad, you know? And
What was it, like Britney Spears or something? What were you complaining about?
I don't know. It was like whatever's popular now, I guess. I don't keep up with the trends.
Miley Cyrus?
Goes, I guess, yeah. But I came to the conclusion that you're better off just spending more time enjoying the company you're with than the things that maybe aren't what you would consider optimal.
Hmm. Like count your blessings, kind of, right?
Yeah. Basically, that's what it boils down to. Count your blessings. You know, enjoy this person. Enjoy what you're doing. Enjoy the fact that you're spending time together. And don't worry about, okay, it's raining out, or okay, I don't really like the music, or I don't like this. You know, this venue we're at, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah. But I'm afraid that when I'm with that person and I'm not enjoying that in the moment, I'm like, this is a signal that is telling you, Derek, get out. There's some other person who's going to be perfect, and you're missing that person. You're not out there finding them. So why would you settle for this thing that you're like is not optimal when the other person you have to go find them?
That could be. That I'm not saying that you should ignore the signal, because it's definitely valid. But from my perspective, I spent so much time looking for what was wrong and worrying and letting that fear and that negativity get to me that I couldn't enjoy what was right. So it's kind of like a balance act. You know, you're walking that tightrope, and you really have to keep it. I mean, we talk about it all the time. It's all about balance, no matter what it is in your life. You know, food, job, sex, relationships, whatever. You got to find that line that is your center and keeps you in balance. That way you can appreciate what you have, and you can grow and further develop your own sense of individuality. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm afraid, so my grandparents are together.
See,
and
dude, this is it right here. How many times in the last hour have I heard you say, I'm afraid? You gotta let go of that fear, man. Fear is the mind killer.
I guess you're right. It's sort of like I'm living in the future of my relationships, and I'm seeing their doom instead of just being like,
in the now.
Here's this is good. I don't know, man. I guess that is the lesson that I'm supposed to take away. But let me tell you, my grandparents are the only people in my entire extended family who have stuck it out and are still together. They're married. They're celebrating their 55th wedding anniversary this weekend. And they're miserable, dude. They hate each other. They're always bickering.
Yeah.
They're always fighting. Yeah. When they tell the stories about this or that trip, it's like, no, Bern, it wasn't like that. You know, and I don't want to be like that.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Words. Hey, so while we were away on break, a listener sent me a video of a College Humor thing of like, what if you knew how every relationship you ever had would end? It was like this girl shaking hands with different guys, and then she sees the future with them and how the relationship eventually falls apart. And I'm like, yes, I can relate. This is how I see it. Like, when I'm meeting guys, I'm seeing like, what's their thing that is like the wedge that's going to divide us? I'm not looking at like, oh, what are the commonalities that I can enjoy and share in this moment? It's like, well, what's the thing?
Problem,
what's the thing down the line that's going to drive us apart? And that's the thing I've been doing with this guy, Rashad, that I was talking about before. I called him the monarchist on previous episodes, but he is a monarchist. He supports the monarchy of England. And I think that's totally insane and crazy, even though he's like for small government and he so likes personal him, freedom. I know. But I don't want to be like,
show him there's a better way.
I know. Okay, so I tried that. We went on to this date last week or this week. We went out for dinner.
Take him to Pork Fest. He'll be fine after
he denied
that.
It. So that broke my heart, man. I told him how cool Pork Fest is. I sent him an invite on Facebook and instantly denied it. It was just like, nah, not going. I'm like, all right. Well, we went to dinner. And these conversations, like, I need to work on making it light, because these conversations can never be, they're always heavy. It's about consent, man. I mean, I don't consent to the government ruling over me. That's what it comes down to, is I don't feel like they have a legitimate authority. Like, there's some authority that's legitimate. Your plumber knows about plumbing and they are an authority on plumbing, but the authorities in Washington DC and in Concord, New Hampshire, these people, I didn't consent to them ruling over my life or making rules for me. I don't consent to this. And when people tell me, oh, well, if you don't like it, leave, which is what he basically said, I was like, well, I need permission to do that too. I need a passport, which I don't have. So I need to beg and pay money. I don't consent to this system, man. And there's nowhere else that I could go where I can truly be free and be left alone. And, you know, he tries to say, oh, social contract and all that, which is total baloney, because contracts, first of all, need to be signed, you know, to be legitimate. Or there's implied contracts, like I brought up the example, we were at a restaurant and the implied contract is we're going to pay for our meal. But I'm saying I can at least walk out of the restaurant. I can't walk out of the country. You know what I'm saying? That I need permission for that too. And then furthermore, the contract has already been invalidated by the fact that the government doesn't hold up their end of the promise. Like, citizenship is an allegiance in exchange for protection. And the Supreme Court decided in 2005 and tons of previous times that the police have no obligation to protect you. The government is not there to protect you. They're there to take your money and control you. And the dude doesn't see it this way. And he was like really looking at me cross-eyed, like, are you serious? You see it like the government is a gang, like a criminal organization of men with guns? And I'm like, yes, that is truly how I see it. Now, I think he thinks I'm crazy now. So I don't know if I blew my chances with this guy or what, but can we even move on? Should I just find some flag-worshipping statist instead and say, you know,
No, definitely not, man. Just don't come on so strong with it. And
I think that's part of my issue. Maybe I came on too strong with it. I need to make him laugh.
It's tough, man.
If you're going to tell people the truth, what did Oscar Wilde say? Make them laugh or else they'll kill you. So I think I need to find more clever ways to break this what is my truth to this person who I care about. You know, I want to have this relationship with them. And that's the other thing is I'm expecting a little more. Like, I'm always setting the dates. I'm always asking him if he wants to hang out. He seems totally content to just do nothing. You know what he did on Friday night? He watched the McLaughlin Group from 1989. I mean, I think that's kind of cool because it's nerdy and weird, and like, at least he doesn't like need to be with someone. But I'm like, hey, what are you doing Friday night? Like, I want to hang out, but I shouldn't be on me to ask every time. You know, if he's not asking me for dates, maybe he's not that into me.
Well, I think your first step needs to be you need to tell him this, or just send him a link to this episode, and you know, make sure he understands that you feel that way. And if he doesn't feel the same, you know, maybe a friendship is all it's going to be.
Yeah. Then you just move on.
It's time. Right. Yeah. And it takes time too. I think, how long you guys been dating?
Since November.
Yeah. Well, it's a good, I don't know.
We haven't said the boyfriend word, you know. I've asked him about some of his previous relationships on our last date, and that was the closest that we've gotten there. But I'm afraid, well, again, here's that word, you know, I'm afraid to bring up the boyfriend word, because I remember making it definite with my previous boyfriends, where it's like, I asked them, do you do this? Where you're like, do you want to be boyfriend, girlfriend?
No, I try to avoid that topic at all costs.
I know, right? It's so uncomfortable, but at some point, I want to make it official, you know? We've been dating since November. I've made him pretty exclusive. I'm not seeing other guys. So, and I'm pretty sure he's not seeing other guys, too. So it's like, you know, I brought him some housewarming gifts. He moved into a new apartment, and he looked all surprised. I'm like, you know, you shouldn't be surprised to get you a gift. We've been seeing each other a little while. Like, you know.
Well, like, I've noticed relationships, dating, seeing, having sex, all that stuff. Everything is so ambiguous nowadays.
There needs to be a book.
People aren't as upfront, and I include myself in this totally. People aren't as upfront about what their perceptions and intentions are, and I think that's what complicates these relationships a lot.
Do you think I should just lay it out, what my perceptions and intentions
are? Well, I think you should definitely make sure this is what you want. And once you've decided for sure if this is what you want, you should be honest with the guy and yes, lay out your perceptions of your relationship with him and your intentions. And if he's not cool with it, then maybe you don't have to, like, okay, that's it, we'll move on. All right, well, we'll try it like this for a little while longer and see how it goes. Because, you know, sometimes these long-term, any type of long-term relationship with a person, you know this, it takes time to develop. And it develops based on common interests and
Shared experiences. Factors. You're supposed to go to things together. Like, you go to concerts and you're like, oh, remember that great concert we went to? You know, and you've got that foundation that you build together. When it's just meeting up for sex every once in a while, then you can't build a foundation on anything other than sex. And that gets old. I mean, that when you're old and ugly and I don't know, whatever, it's eventually going to die off. You need something more grounded, something. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, man. I just saw an article on Drudge, and the title was Sex at 72 or 77. It's about Jane Fonda.
Okay, well, some people can pull it off.
Secret to Youth, and yeah
but you know what I'm saying? It's got to be other stuff, otherwise I'm just the regular booty call, and I don't want that. I want to have a real relationship.
Well, no, everyone wants to feel special. And they want to feel loved and cared about. And I think there are different levels to that. But yeah, you definitely just don't want to be a booty call. So I think the first thing I would suggest is to let go of that fear. Mm-hmm. And then really kind of work it out as to what you hope to accomplish, and then just be honest. And like I said, it may not, November is not that, that's, it's not a long time. You guys haven't even been together a year yet. So give it some time. And I generally say after a year, if you haven't found that commonality and that communication, it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah,
not that
you're right.
I'm an expert by any means, but I think a year is enough time to at least build that foundation. And if you don't feel like that foundation is being built, then yeah,
I feel don't more waste of a time. I feel more of a spark though. You know the song. Does he love me? I want to know. And then it's
no,
in his
I
kiss.
Don't know that song.
Come on, yes you do. It's an old. It's
no, like, I don't know.
Oh, come on. Cher sings it, and a bunch of other people sang it, but it's it's in his kiss. You know if he loves you from in his kiss, and like that is true for all relationships. I have felt this way that you. It's not just like a I mean, that's one sexual way. It's not always sexual.
No, it's not sexual.
It's just this. All. It's this other spark that you know whether or not someone really cares. Probably sometimes in the way they kiss you.
Yeah. Well, and again, I think there's different levels to that, and that's where the whole relationship thing gets complicated because you have to gauge what.
I think they can fake it. You can fake a good kiss, but you can't.
I don't think
you can't.
Can. I absolutely don't think you can.
Really? You mean nope. Like that is a true indicator of love?
I think you can be a good kisser, but I don't think you can fake what's behind it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and an observant person, not an experienced, but an observant person. Can probably pick up on that.
Well, then I'm going to pursue it. I'm going to go after this guy. I'm going to ignore those signals that say maybe he's not that into me. And I'm going to just say, take it slow, have no fear, enjoy the moment, and share some experiences together.
I don't think you should necessarily ignore, but kind of put that, like, put that. That those signals and that fear in the corner, you know, put it in the back room in mm-hmm. the woodshed in all the right. back of your mind. So it's still there to, cause you know, the fear is a, what's the term I'm looking for?
It's a killer,
a survival response.
Oh,
it is, you know, I mean, in certain circumstances, fear is a necessary and very valuable emotion.
What was it in Donnie Darko? Didn't they put the scale of everything on fear and love?
Yeah. That was a, wow, that was a really trippy movie.
Yeah, but in a way, according to the Donnie Darko ethos, fear is the opposite of love. So if I'm having a bunch of this fear, maybe that's what's keeping me from experiencing the real love.
It could be. And again, I always go back to balance.
I think we've had a real breakthrough here, Doc.
Yeah.
Oh, no. All right, Chandler. When we come back, let's do redemption in the third act.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's fiendphone.com, F-E-E-N-P-H-O-N-E.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
Fiendphone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Worms.
So I think you just need to go to like more hippie shows and feel the love and you'll be all good.
Yeah, maybe we should go to a Saul Williams show.
I'm down.
No, not totally. You and me. We can go to some show together, but I'm talking about me and my lover.
Hey,
here.
Yeah, you should come to Maine and come see Slayer.
All right. Slayer still performs live.
Yeah, I think this is the last tour for them.
Yeah, it's got to be.
They're playing, I think, a couple of weeks before Porkfest, and I'm going with a friend.
Wow, that'll be awesome.
It should be interesting. I've seen them a bunch of times before, but they never fail to disappoint.
Yeah, it seems like it would be a good show.
Yep.
Yeah, there's like a generation of rockers that I think never put on a bad show. You know, Rolling Stones and stuff. They were real, like, I don't know. It's a generation of that. Like, I don't expect Miley Cyrus in 40 years to be hitting stages and making headlines and like, oh, what a great show by Miley. Like, no, there's a time and a place for modern pop stars. And it's just now, not later. Like, but I did see Janet Jackson is coming out with a new album, which is pretty weird.
That is weird.
I'm excited about it though. I'll feel it out.
I don't even know the last time she made an album, like 20 years ago.
Yeah. All the girls at the party, look at that body, shaking that thing. Was that that area? No, you don't remember that? Anyway.
Nope, not so much.
Well, let's recap here. Let's decompress. As we decompose. We talked about Saul Williams. And your awesome experience and how art is...
art saves.
Art saves. It's the way out of the government for those who don't use activism or the standard old model of activism. It's new activism. It's new. Well, what's old is new again.
And for me, like, it's not a form of activism. It just makes me feel good.
Yeah,
you know, when I write something, I don't care how crappy it is, and I don't care if like five people see it. I feel good after I get that out and do it, you know. And 100 years down the road, somebody stumbles across it and thinks it's great, awesome. You know, I'm immortal now, but I don't care if that ever happens or not. So, and I think that's a form of art, definitely.
We talked about bug out bags and what should be in them. Definitely guns. Definitely fire.
Don't forget your toilet paper rolls.
Toilet paper
rolls. And toilet paper. You should actually have toilet paper.
We forgot that one. Yes, I'll be sure to include that.
That's really good. Yeah, I mean, you know, wiping with leaves is not fun.
Actually, I am I'm so 21st century. I don't even use regular old toilet paper anymore. They have a new wet kind.
They have an app for that?
No, they have an app for it's like the kind for babies. They advertise it as if it's for babies, but why wouldn't everyone want this? They come in little portable packages and it's more condensed than standard toilet paper and it is way better. So, I don't know. I'm going to put that in my bug out bag, but you can't light it on fire. And include a compass, a flashlight that you can crank up, and I'm forgetting something. What's the most important thing to have in a bug out bag?
I don't know, man. It's going to be a well balanced bug out bag.
A knife. It's obvious. Yeah. We need a knife and water are the other two things. And
some sort of filter.
And finally, love. Talked about love.
Fill that bug out bag with love.
Yes. Make your bug out bag with your partner or pack for two. You never know if you're going to be out in the wilderness with your friend or your lover and you want them both to survive. It would be a really harsh time in the wilderness if you had to eat your lover.
You want to see a good movie that's kind of the bug out bag thing reminded me of it. Check out The Edge with Anthony Hopkins and Alec Baldwin.
Excellent movie. Anything Anthony Hopkins in is going to be creepy to the max.
No, he's great, and he's not creepy. He's brilliant in this movie. It's totally worth checking out.
Well, Chandler, Dr. St. Pierre, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain.
My hamster's asleep.
Yeah, my hamster's dead on the wheel. We'll do this again. I missed you, man.
Yeah.
But it's been a while since we've done one of these.
Yeah,
I want to thank
we'll be doing another one soon here, a couple of weeks, I think.
I want to thank Michael Dean for making The Fiends what it is. I love that guy. And thank our board op. Thank you for your service, making it good tonight with our special song.
Thanks for everyone that listens to us and gives us feedback.
Worms.
Worms.